To start with, why will you be taking the streets tomorrow?
Well, it's the 8th of March and it's International Women's Day. And so it's a day when traditionally women in many parts of the world both celebrate but also agitate and organize to draw attention to the fact that there's still so much more to be done to achieve gender equality.
Why did you choose why do you choose to denounce precarity on International Women's Day?
Okay, well, the march and the event just before the march are being organized, as they have been in Montreal for the past 12 years, by a coalition called the 8th March Committee of Women of Diverse Origins. And as women of diverse origins, we represent women coming from different backgrounds, whether it's racial, linguistic, socioeconomic, age, and this year we feel, particularly in light of what has been happening in Quebec around the so-called Charter of Values, that it has diverted attention from really pressing issues, economic issues, a sense of insecurity and precariousness that affects the entire population, but women, because of gender inequality and the sort of double oppression and double jeopardy, are further marginalized by what's going on. And so we wanted to draw attention to this. So economic precariousness, violence against women, for Indigenous women, both racism and the issue of women who are being murdered and who are missing, and also in terms of the realities that students face, the violence that women faces. So precariousness and insecurity in a whole range of areas, people who are here as migrants or who do not have status, who are being deported, and so on.
I'd like to talk a bit more about the forms of precarity that affect women in particular. Can you tell me which ones?
Well, take, for example, employment. Now, the Canadian government has passed employment equity legislation, which means that everybody gets equal pay for work of equal value. And in Quebec, this has also happened. But what we find is the reality on the ground is very different. And across Canada, a woman earns approximately 70 cents for every dollar that a man may earn. So right there, you have a huge difference. So in the what women are being paid and what men are being paid, and from that economic inequality, then it has an impact on life, women's possibility to have a decent lifestyle, to live with dignity. And in addition to that, as women are usually they bear the children and stay with the children when they are younger, we also find, in addition to this, that the majority of households that are in poverty are headed by women, single women. So just these few examples give you, a very clear sense right away of how there's a economic precariousness.
What about precarity of migration? How do immigration policies affect women in Montreal?
The immigration policies have over the years been changed. Things are being made tighter. There is greater arbitrariness, for example, in the refugee process, the possibility of appealing decisions that might be problematic because the improper information was given and so on, make things difficult. So that's for refugees, as a whole, men and women. But when we talk about women, for example, in Montreal, recently there's the case of Yvonne Hernandez, who was here and was served with a deportation order because her her marriage had ended. And for example, I'm very involved with the South Asian Women's Center, and over there we see women who come as sponsored spouses, and if the marriage breaks down within a three-year period, then the woman will have to be deported. She cannot stay here. If she has a child, as in the case of Yvonne, the immigration authorities may say the child can stay, but the mother cannot stay. So it creates terrible stress, anxiety, distress, and puts women in situations where they might stay in a violent relationship because they realize that if they opt out, then they will be deported and they will lose their lives here, they will lose their children here. So it creates, and there are many more women who come as sponsored spouses than there are men. So right there you have an example of precariousness with immigration policies.
Could you talk about Aboriginal women in Canada? How are they touched by precarity?
Aboriginal communities across Canada, as they are in most parts of the world, suffer from, marginalization. In Canada, we have the history of colonization and settlement and deracination. And so you have communities that are already, undermined economically, socially, and culturally, and are left with few resources to survive. And so when women in these communities find themselves in precarious situations, there's always the greater possibility of precariousness for women than there is for men, generally speaking, because of patriarchy and because of systemic sexism. And then if you add racism to that, then Aboriginal women, have these layers of oppressions and insecurities and precariousness that they are subjected to. And there's also a sense of, like, certain people don't count in the same way. And so if, an Aboriginal woman is missing, we have seen historically that there isn't the same response by the justice system as there would be for a non-Aboriginal woman. So there are people who sort of count and people who don't count. And so that's one example of how, for Aboriginal women and for their families and communities, this has been, a tragic history of neglect, official and sort of tacit.
Now, I'd like to take those two cases, migrant women and Aboriginal women. What are the means for these women to get any kind of help?
There are, official channels, and by official channels I mean, you have, police authorities, and definitely if there are instances of violence, one could, lodge a complaint. But because of histories of abuse and neglect and of a fear of the state and state authorities, these are not necessarily the places that individuals in danger would go to. And so what we find more effective are, community supports, or, for example, organizations that deal specifically, for example, again, and I'll give you the example of the South Asian Women's Center because that's the one that I'm most familiar with. But, for example, we work with women who, because of linguistic and cultural minoritization, might find it difficult to communicate. So very often then, if women do come to us, they refer to us, and we are able to assist them and walk them through the channels, explain what their options are, that they do have rights, that they can live on their own if this is what they choose, that we will support them. And similarly, for example, in Montreal, there is, the Native Friendship Center, there's the Quebec Native Women's Association, there's a Native Women's Shelter. But very often, people generally out there are unaware of resources that are available. And when your life is in turmoil and you're in distress, you're even more anxious and uncertain. And speaking as somebody, you know, who has been a feminist for many years, I can also say that even if you are aware, sometimes it's just very, very difficult to come out and speak about certain things to friends and family and communities. So there are kind of personal hurdles, there are systemic hurdles, there are social hurdles.
Could you talk about precarity that comes from the commodification of the female body?
Yes. Well, you know, it's so interesting. You know, for example, we've talked about the impact of advertising and, you know, the way women's bodies have been used. And this isn't something new. It's been going on for so long. Women's bodies are used routinely to sell consumer goods that the body is not linked to in any way. You know, okay, you can say if you're selling, you know, clothing, okay, but even then, like, what kind of clothing? But, you know, cars, automobiles, etc. And what is becoming more and more insidious is that the messaging that one finds in these advertisements really sort of looks at the female body as a commodity. You might sometimes find sort of just dismembered portions of the body, or you know, some of the ads that you see for perfumes, for example, are set up like a gang rape situation. And what happens is repeated exposure to these images causes, on the one hand, desensitization to the inherent violence of the imaging, but also it creates an atmosphere of acceptance. And increasingly, for example, across Canada, we're hearing of the rape culture on university campuses. Now, this is no accident. This is no coincidence. It's very much a reflection of what is happening in society, that it is okay to use violence against women, that gang rape is something acceptable, that no doesn't necessarily mean no. So the commodification of the female body, and it's not about being a prude or moralizing or anything like that, but it is, you know, if everybody was in a nudist colony, then not being clothed is not an issue, but it's when you kind of, everybody's fully clad and you kind of put out images that might be sexually titillating and so on, but in a very commercialized way. So it's not about being anti-eroticism. It's not about moralizing, but it's literally the use of the female body for profit.
So these forms of precarity are just a few of the numerous forms of precarity that exist. There's one more thing I'd like to mention, if you can talk about it.
Yeah, there's one more thing I wanted to say about the commodification of the female body. I'm talking about the sort of scantily clad female body that's used in advertising. And what is interesting is that, for example, with the charter, it's more of a problem for the female body to be clad than to be unclad. You know, it's a kind of irony over there. Yeah, sorry, you have asked me one more question.
That's exactly what I wanted to say, actually. You mentioned the charter.
Yes.
So precarity that comes from discrimination and racism, or any kind of discrimination on the basis of religion. Could you talk about that?
Yes, I mean, religions, all religions in the world, the mainstream religions are patriarchal, and they reflect patriarchal cultures, even though religions might have, you know, very positive moral aspects and ethical aspects, but they have come about in contexts where patriarchy has been the dominant system. And so a lot of the rules and regulations and the rituals and the do's and the don'ts that get layered onto the morals and ethics reflect patriarchy. That being said, you know, we accept that you know, women have been dictated to for centuries to do this, don't do that, how to dress, how not to dress. And so if a woman chooses to be observant religiously without any coercion, and, you know, that should not be a problem. So it's not religion per se, you know, but it is the way that it might be forced. And so what the charter does is it kind of creates a kind of notion of a secular religion that's as dogmatic and as coercive as a patriarchal religion can be dogmatic and coercive.
Can you remind us about the public meeting and the demonstration tomorrow? When and where are those two events going to take place?
Yes, so the public meeting is happening at 1 o'clock, Dawson College. You exit from Atwater Metro and you go to Dawson College, and there'll be signs telling you the room number. And then at 3:30, the demonstration starts just beyond there from Cabot Square, which is on Atwater and St. Catherine. And everybody's invited to participate, to both celebrate and also to raise awareness about all the things that still have to be done to ensure gender equality.
What's the program for the public meeting? What is going to be discussed?
Well, there will be representatives speaking on various issues of precarity, quite a few of the things that we were mentioning just now. There'll be people from organizations dealing with this who will be speaking.
Finally, what are you hoping to achieve with this demonstration tomorrow?
Well, to let people know that there is such a day and why there is such a day, and to also have a good time and be together with people who, you know, think about issues in the same way and are struggling to make a better world for all.
Do you have any other perspectives in the longer term?
No, but it's very good for me to see, as an older woman, younger women participating and seeing the importance of identifying as feminists, and I hope we see more of that.
Dolores, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Emily. Bye-bye.
Bye.